Chapter 2. Planet Hadoral Prime. Day 84 of the Midran Retreat. 9 years later.
The rain on Hadoral Prime dropped in warm sheets from a shining sky. It smelled like vinegar, clung to the molded curves of modular industrial buildings and to litter-strewn streets, and coated skin like a sheen of acrid sweat. After 30 standard hours, it was losing its novelty for the soldiers of Twilight Company. Three figures crept along a deserted avenue under a torn and dripping canopy. The lean, compact man in the lead was dressed in faded gray fatigues and a hodgepodge of armor pads, crudely stenciled with the starboard symbol of the Rebel Alliance. Matted dark hair dripped beneath his visored helmet, sending crawling trails of rainwater down his bronze face. His name was Hazram Namir, though he'd gone by others. He silently cursed urban warfare and Hadoral Prime and whichever laws of atmospheric science made it rain. The thought of sleep flashed into his mind and broke against a wall of stubbornness. He gestured with a rifle thicker than his arm toward the nearest intersection, then quickened his pace. Somewhere in the distance, a swift series of blaster shots resounded, followed by shouts and silence. The figure closest behind Namir, a tall man with graying hair and a face puckered with scar tissue, bounded across the street to take up a position opposite. The third figure, a massive form huddled in a tarp like a hooded cloak, remained behind. The scarred man flashed a hand signal. Namir turned the corner onto the intersecting street. A dozen meters away, the sodden lumps of human bodies lay in the road. They wore tattered rain gear, sleek, lightweight wraps and sandals, and carried no weapons. Non-combatants. It's a shame, Namir thought, but not a bad sign. The Empire didn't shoot civilians when everything was under control. Charmer, take a look. Namir indicated the bodies. The scarred man strode over as Namir tapped his comlink. Sector secure, he said. What's on tap next? The response came in a hiss of static through Namir's earpiece, something about mop-up operations. Namir missed having a communications specialist on staff. Twilight Company's last comm tech had been a drunk and a misanthrope, but she'd been magic with the transmitter, and she'd written obscene poetry with Namir on late, dull nights. She and her idiot droid had died in the bombardment on a surface. Say again, Namir tried. Are we ready to load? This time the answer came through clearly.
Support teams are crating up food and equipment. If you've got a lead on medical supplies, we'd love more for the Thunderstrike. Otherwise, get to the rendezvous. We only have a few hours before reinforcements show.
Tell support to grab hygiene items this time, Namir said. Anyone who says they're luxuries needs to smell the barracks. There was another burst of static and maybe a laugh.
I'll let them know. Stay safe.
Charmer was finishing his study of the bodies, checking each for a heartbeat and identification. He shook his head, silent as he straightened.
Atrocity.
The hulking figure wrapped in the tarp had finally approached. His voice was deep and resonant. Two meaty, four-fingered hands kept the tarp clasped at his shoulders, while a second pair of hands loosely carried a massive blaster cannon at waist level.
How can anyone born of flesh do this?
Charmer bit his lip. Namir shrugged. Could have been combat droids for all we know.
Unlikely,
the hulking figure said.
But if so, responsibility belongs to the governor.
He knelt beside one of the corpses and reached out to lid its eyes. Each of his hands was as large as the dead man's head. Come on, Gadrin. Namir said, someone will find them. Gadrin stayed kneeling. Charmer opened his mouth to speak, then shut it. Namir wondered whether to push the point, and if so, how hard. Then the wall next to him exploded, and he stopped worrying about Gadrin. Fire and metal shards and grease and insulation pelted his spine. He couldn't hear and couldn't guess how he ended up in the middle of the road among the bodies, one leg bent beneath him. Something tacky was stuck to his chin, and his helmet's visor was cracked. He had enough presence of mind to feel lucky he hadn't lost an eye. Suddenly, he was moving again. He was upright, and hands, Charmer's hands, were dragging him backward, clasping him below the shoulders. He snarled the native curses of his homeworld as a red storm of particle bolts flashed among the fire and debris. By the time he'd pushed Charmer away and wobbled onto his feet, he'd traced the bolts to their source. Four Imperial stormtroopers stood at the mouth of an alley up the street. Their deathly pale armor gleamed in the rain, and the black eyepieces of their helmets gaped like pits. Their weapons shone with oil and machined care, as if the squad had stepped fully formed out of a mold. Namir tore his gaze from the enemy long enough to see that his back was to a storefront window filled with video screens. He raised his blaster rifle, fired at the display, then climbed in among the shards. Charmer followed. The storefront wouldn't give them cover for long, certainly not if the stormtroopers fired another rocket, but it would have to be enough. "Check for a way up top!" Namir yelled, and his voice sounded faint and tinny. He couldn't hear the storm of blaster bolts at all. "We need covering fire!" Not looking to see if Charmer obeyed, he dropped to the floor as the stormtroopers adjusted their aim to the storm. He couldn't spot Gadrin either. He ordered the alien into position anyway, hoping he was alive and that the comlink still worked. He lined his rifle under his chin, fired twice in the direction of the stormtroopers, and was rewarded with a moment of peace. "I need you on target, Brand," he growled into his link. "I need you here now." If anyone answered, he couldn't hear it. Now he glimpsed the stormtrooper carrying the missile launcher. The trooper was still reloading, which meant Namir had half a minute at most before the storefront came tumbling down on top of him. He took a few quick shots and saw one of the other troopers fall, though he doubted he'd hit his target. He guessed Charmer had found a vantage point after all. Three stormtroopers remaining. One was moving away from the alley while the other stayed to protect the artilleryman. Namir shot wildly at the one moving into the street, watched him skid and fall to a knee, and smiled grimly. There was something satisfying about seeing a trained stormtrooper humiliate himself. Namir's own side did it often enough. Jerky movements drew Namir's attention back to the artilleryman. Behind the stormtrooper stood Gadrin, both sets of arms gripping and lifting his foe. Human limbs flailed, and the missile launcher fell to the ground. White armor seemed to crumple in the alien's hands. Gadrin's makeshift hood blew back, exposing his head. A brown, bulbous, wide-mouthed mass topped with a darker crest of bone, like some amphibian's nightmare idol. The second trooper in the alley turned to face Gadrin and was promptly slammed to the ground with his comrade's body before Gadrin crushed them both, howling in rage or grief. Namir trusted Gadrin as much as he trusted anyone, but there were times when the alien terrified him. The last stormtrooper was still down on the street. Namir fired until flames licked a burnt and melted hole in the man's armor. Namir, Charmer, and Gadrin gathered back around the bodies and assessed their own injuries. Namir's hearing was coming back. The damage to his helmet extended far beyond the visor. A crack ran along its length, and he found a shallow cut across his forehead when he tossed the helmet to the street. Charmer was picking shards of shrapnel from his vest, but made no complaints. Gadrin was shivering in the warm rain.
"No Brand?"
Gadrin asked. Namir only grunted. Charmer laughed his weird, hiccuping laugh and spoke. He swallowed the words twice, three, four times as he went, half stuttering as he had ever since the fight on Blacktar Cyst.
"Keep piling bodies like this," he said. "We'll have the best vantage point in the city."
He gestured at Namir's last target, who had fallen directly onto one of the civilian corpses. You're a sick man, Charmer, Namir said, and swung an arm roughly around his comrade's shoulders. I'll miss you when they boot you out. Gadran grunted and sniffed behind them. It might have been dismay, but Namir chose to take it as mirth. Officially, the city was Hedoro Administrative Center 1, but locals called it Glitter, after the crystalline mountains that limned the horizon. In Namir's experience, what the Galactic Empire didn't name to inspire terror, its stormtrooper legions, its star destroyer battleships, it tried to render as drab as possible. This didn't bother Namir, but he wasn't among the residents of the planets and cities being labeled. Half a dozen rebel squads had already arrived at the central plaza when Namir's team marched in. The rain had condensed into mist, and the plaza's tents and canopies offered little shelter. Nonetheless, men and women in ragged armor squeezed into the driest corners they could find, grumbling to one another or tending to minor wounds and damaged equipment. As victory celebrations went, it was subdued. It had been a long fight for little more than the promise of a few fresh meals. "Stop admiring yourselves and do something useful!" Namir barked, barely breaking stride. "Support teams can use a hand if you're too good to play greeter." He barely noticed the squad stir in response. Instead, his attention shifted to a woman emerging from the shadows of a speeder stand. She was tall and thickly built, dressed in rugged pants and a bulky maroon jacket. A scoped rifle was slung over her shoulder, and the armor mesh of a retracted face mask covered her neck and chin. Her skin was gently creased with age and as dark as a human's could be. Her hair cropped close to her scalp, but she didn't so much as glance at Namir as she arrived at his side and matched his pace through the plaza. "You want to tell me where you were?" Namir asked.
"You missed the second fire team. I took care of it," Bran said.
Namir kept his voice cool. "Drop me a hint next time?"
"You didn't need the distraction."
Namir laughed. "Love you too." Brand cocked her head. If she got the joke, and Namir expected she did, she wasn't amused.
"So what now?" she asked.
"We've got 8 hours before we leave the system," Namir said, and stopped with his back to an overturned kiosk. He leaned against the metal frame and stared into the mist. "Less if Imperial ships come before then, or if the Governor's forces regroup. After that, we'll divvy up the supplies with the rest of the battle group. Probably keep an escort ship or two for the Thunderstrike before the others split off."
"And we abandon this sector to the Empire," Bran said.
By this time, Charmer had wandered off and Gadrin had joined Namir and Brand.
"We will return," he said gravely.
"Right," Namir said, smirking. "Something to look forward to." He knew they were the wrong words at the wrong time. 18 months earlier, the Rebel Alliance's 61st Mobile Infantry, commonly known as Twilight Company, had joined the push into the galactic mid-rim. The operation was among the largest the Rebellion had ever fielded against the Empire, involving thousands of starships, hundreds of battlegroups, and dozens of worlds. In the wake of the Rebellion's victory against the Empire's planet-burning Death Star battle station, High Command had believed the time was right to move from the fringes of Imperial territory toward its population centers. Twilight Company had fought in the factory deserts of Forsa Ged and taken the Ducal Palace of Bamayar. It had established beachheads for rebel hover tanks and erected bases from tarps and sheet metal. Namir had seen soldiers lose limbs and go weeks without proper treatment. He'd trained teams to construct makeshift bayonets when blaster power packs ran low. He'd set fire to cities and watched the Empire do the same. He'd left friends behind on broken worlds, knowing he'd never see them again. On planet after planet, Twilight had fought. Battles were won and battles were lost, and Namir stopped keeping score. Twilight remained the Rebellion's vanguard, forging ahead of the bulk of the Armada, until word came down from High Command 9 months in the fleet was overextended. There was to be no further advance, only defense of the newly claimed territories. Not long after that, the retreat began. Twilight Company had become the rear guard of a massive withdrawal. It deployed to worlds it had helped capture mere months earlier and evacuated the bases it had built. It extracted the rebellion's heroes and generals and pointed the way home. It marched over the graves of its own dead soldiers. Some of the company lost hope. Some became angry. No one wanted to go back. When the civilians came out of hiding and into the plaza, the open recruit began. Sergeant Zab Squad, the squad Namir had once called in a moment of pique, morons who could make a Hydra spanner backfire, had somehow smuggled an astromech droid into the city surveillance center. From there, they'd accessed the public address system and broadcast the captain's message. Twilight Company would soon depart Hadoral Prime. Those on Hadoral who shared the rebellion's ideals of freedom and democracy could remain to defend their homes, or they could sign on with Twilight to take the fight to the enemy, to go where the rebellion was needed most, and so forth. The captain recorded a new broadcast every time Twilight went looking to bolster its ranks, tailored to the needs and the circumstances of the local population. To Namir, all the messages sounded alike. Open recruitments were technically against Rebel Alliance security policy, but they were a Twilight Company tradition, and the captain was insistent the practice continue. So long as the rebellion sent Twilight into hell time and again, and so long as Twilight survived, the company would replenish its losses from the ranks of the willing. On Hadoral Prime, 7 Twilight soldiers had died. Namir hadn't yet seen their names. Twilight would need 7 newcomers to balance those losses, and still more to make up for those who died elsewhere in recent weeks. Dozens of men and women trickled into the plaza over the space of an hour, hand-checked by Twilight greeters for weapons and concealed explosives. Not all of them were there to be recruited. Barefoot women with calloused hands begged Twilight to stay. Hunched elderly men screamed for the company to leave. A disorganized band of locals voiced their desire to keep fighting the Empire on Hadoral. These were given what few weapons Twilight had to spare and sent away with meaningless well-wishing and invocations of the cause. The genuine recruits were a motley assortment of young and old, pampered and desperate. Namir paced among them, watched their eyes, and passed his assessments on to the recruiting officer. A bearded and bedraggled man had the look of a street person, but the carriage of a bureaucrat. Namir pegged him as an imperial spy. A pug-nosed woman shifted her eyes to an escape route when Namir casually moved his weapon from one hand to the other. A petty criminal, looking for an easy way off the planet, he thought. That day's recruiting officer, Hober, a withered and creak-kneed quartermaster with a knack for card games, took Namir's recommendations with a shrug.
"You know Howell's orders," he said.
Namir did. Captain Ivan Howell went outside earshot. Liked to err on the side of welcome. He and Namir had spoken at length about that particular policy. "Just keep an eye out," Namir said. "You have to be a special kind of crazy to jump aboard a sinking ship." Ober snorted and shook his head.
"Say that louder and we can close up early."
Namir didn't say it louder. A bit of crazy wasn't always a bad thing. Still, he needed recruits he could train, not deserters or unhinged killers. The line moved slowly. Hober engaged the potential recruits with questions, chatted about their pastimes and families as much as their combat experience. Hober was good at his job, good at judging who would last and who would panic and get someone killed. Namir paced and tried to stay out of the way. Intellectually, he knew what the recruits felt like. Knew they'd be more likely to come clean when relaxed. He'd been in their position less than 3 years before. But at the moment, he couldn't muster either interest or sympathy. Someone in the line shouted. Namir turned to see three locals grappling with one another. Two of them were cursing and striking the third, a pale, gangly girl with a bolt of red hair. The apparent victim went down four times in as many seconds, popped back up after each hit, and seemed ready to keep brawling. Not a good fighter, but Namir gave her credit for persistence. He fired three shots above the trio. They went still. The red-haired girl couldn't have been more than a teenager, and the other two looked scarcely older. "Do I need to care what's going on here?" Namir asked, then cut the air horizontally with his hand before anyone could answer. "We'll all be happier if you say no." The three youths shook their heads. "Fight on my ship, and you'll be sealed in a maintenance closet until you starve to death," Namir said. "I won't waste blaster bolts on you. I won't waste oxygen shooting you out an airlock. You'll die slowly because I don't care." Namir lacked both the callousness and the authority to carry out that particular threat, but the would-be recruits didn't know it. One of the older pair hesitated, then turned and stalked away. The other two lowered their eyes. "How old are you?" Namir asked the red-haired kid.
20,
she said, jerking her head back up. That didn't seem likely, but there was no time for background checks. Nor would she be the first 16-year-old to enlist in the Alliance. Namir turned and nodded his approval to Hober. The old quartermaster looked skeptical. Namir wondered if Hober would admit the girl into the ranks of Twilight's fresh meat, but he suspected the man would do so against his own better judgment. It wasn't about being welcoming. These days, Twilight Company couldn't afford to be choosy. 3 hours into the open recruit, word came down that Namir's squad was needed outside the governor's mansion. It was a welcome distraction. Twilight had locked down the mansion during the first day of fighting. The compound of multi-tiered domes was on the outskirts of the city, impractically far from the center of Imperial power, but possessed of an impressive view of the crystalline mountains. After the initial skirmishing, Captain Howell had ordered half a dozen rebel squads stationed around its perimeter, within a stone's throw of its scorched but intact outer wall. No attempt to capture it had been made. With its occupants contained, the mansion itself had seemed strategically insignificant. Since then, the situation had evolved.
"Masteroid rolled out through a side entrance half an hour ago," Sergeant Fectron said. "We figured it was rigged to blow. Turned out clean. It was carrying a written message from a rebel sympathizer inside the mansion."
Namir, Gadrin, Charmer, and Brand stood across from the mansion wall. The others rechecked their equipment as Namir and Fectron spoke. Periodically, one of the mansion's windows slid open, spat a volley of hissing red particle bolts onto the street, then shut again. Fectron's team barely seemed to notice.
"What'd the message say?"
Namir asked.
"That Governor Chalice's men are holding captured rebel soldiers inside. Our anonymous tipster, and I quote, fears for their safety."
Namir spat onto the road and watched his saliva sizzle where the bolts had impacted. "They know we've accounted for everyone, right? Do they think we're that stupid?"
"I told Howe the same thing,"
Fectron said.
"More or less."
The ridges of his face crinkled in discomfort, and the tendrils dangling from his cheeks and chin seemed to curl. Namir thought of those tendrils as a sort of beard, though he'd never asked if they were present on the women of Fectron species.
"But the captain's worried the governor might have grabbed some locals. Once it checked out. Besides,"
Fectron went on,
"if it's a trap, then what's the point? We lose a squad in there. We don't exactly lose the war."
Namir stared at Fectron with as much skepticism as he could muster.
"So the captain's theory," he said, "is that he can afford to gamble away our lives on the off chance we'll save a few civvies."
Fectron's tendrils twitched, but Namir kept talking.
"Do I have this right?"
Gadrin was frowning. Fectron took it in stride.
Namir had never seen Fectron smile, but the alien had a deadpan sense of humor.
"You want to take it up with Howell?"
Fectron asked. Namir swore and barked a bitter laugh. "Fine," he said. "But if we die, we're taking the whole mansion down with us." Charmer came up with the squad's approach. Climbing the wall or besieging the main entrance would draw too much opposition. Fectron would prep a frontal assault, but only for use as a last resort. Instead, Namir, Brand, and Charmer made their way to the rooftop garden of one of the neighboring residences. The occupants were more than cooperative after Namir burned 3 blaster holes in their custodial droid and stayed out of sight while Charmer secured a magnetic grappling gun in one of the flower beds. Brand watched the governor's mansion through the lenses of her armored mask. On her signal, Charmer fired the gun and sent the grapnel soaring through the resurgent air. It struck the wall abutting one of the mansion's lower balconies, attached, and pulled the line taut. Namir traversed the gap first, sliding down the line and landing with a jolt on the damp stone. Charmer came next, then Brand. Brand severed the line with a curved knife that she pulled from her jacket. The blade hummed softly with electricity.
"Where'd you get that?"
Namir asked.
"Confiscated," Brand said.
Namir glanced at Charmer, who pulled a stun rod from his belt and extended the baton. It looked like it would snap in two with a bit of effort. He passed it to Namir, who shook his head until Charmer pressed the weapon into his palm.
"I have my own knife," Charmer said, forcing the words past his stutter. "You need a nedge."
Namir scowled but didn't argue. It was true he didn't have the taller man's reach.
"We're heading in," he said, tapping his comlink. "You hear screams, you know what to do."
Gadran's deep voice came through, mixed with static.
"I will weep at your funerals, and after grieving, I will requisition a gravel that can support my mass. Many lives will be saved in the future."
"That's the spirit," Namir said. Together, the three proceeded into the mansion. The rooms were dark and spacious in the imperial style, appointed with lush carpets and glittering holographic mobiles that rotated and pulsed with the movements of the squad. Namir led the way through connected suites and into a tall, narrow hallway carved from mountain crystal. There, bronze busts and statuettes sat in niches along the wall. Namir didn't recognize most of the subjects. The men and women in the statuettes nearly all wore imperial military uniforms or robes of state. A bust of an elderly man with cheeks like melted wax and thinning hair bore a resemblance to the Galactic Emperor. Namir had seen him before in rebel propaganda videos. A horned figure might have been the Emperor's aged vizier. Namir dredged his memory for the name. Mas Amida. Charmer and Brand seemed more familiar with the lineup. Charmer scowled at a middle-aged man whose bulbous alien eyes were set in a human face and whose neck was braced by a thick metal collar. The round collar gave the bust the appearance of a grotesque potted plant. Brand paused before the recreation of a misshapen helmet of curves and angles and skull-like eyes. "You know him?" Namir asked.
"Not personally," Brand said.
"Darth Vader,"
Charmer said. He didn't stammer.
"The Galactic Emperor's personal enforcer. Hound of the Rebel Alliance, born from the embers of the Clone Wars, perpetrator of every horror and atrocity known to civilization."
So the stories went anyway.
"Right," Namir whispered. "Can we get on with it?"
To Namir's surprise, Brand looked at him and spoke in a low, somber tone.
"You should know these people," she said. "Darth Vader, General Tulia, Count Vidian. Look at their faces and memorize everyone."
Namir returned Brand's stare, cool and calm. Brand didn't back down. I get it, Namir said softly. I do. You don't, Bran said, and began to walk again. Charmer, three steps ahead, gestured before the stairway at the end of the hall. Two fingers raised, thumb moving across the palm. Two guards stationed at the top of the stairs, one patrolling. Brand went first. In his darker moments, Namir resented the older woman's capacity for stealth. But not today. Not when his own wet boots squeaked like rats on the polished floor. He followed her, tightening his grip on the stun baton, with Charmer so close behind he could feel the man's body heat. Up the stairs. Two guards, neither in full armor. Local security. Bran stepped out of the mouth of the stairwell, and Namir heard sizzling as the electrified knife found its first target. Namir charged forward, body low, looking for the patrol. Charmer would know to take the second guard behind him. The sentry on patrol was less than 5 meters away, and Namir felt his guts clench when they spotted each other. An Imperial stormtrooper. The trooper was still turning to face him. Namir had time to close the distance, but the stun baton would be useless against that white armor. He should have asked to borrow Brand's knife when he'd had the chance. Namir raised his shoulder as he charged. He slammed into the stormtrooper and spun him to face the stairwell. Now at the trooper's back, Namir clung to the armor's cool surface and tried to pin the man's arms, prevent him from getting off even one shot with his blaster. That noise would alert the entire mansion, and their attempt at stealth would be compromised. The stormtrooper reacted swiftly, competently. He threw his head back, grazed Namir's scalp where Namir's abandoned helmet should have protected him. If Namir had been standing straight instead of bending his knees, he would have taken the hit between the eyes. After a moment, he smelled burning metal and plastoid, and the stormtrooper went limp as Brand twisted her knife under the rim of his helmet. Namir tried to guide the body in a slide onto the floor, but it clattered more loudly than he'd intended. Charmer stood between the two security guards, both dead on the ground. Brand had already cleaned her knife by the time Namir said, "Keep moving." The message warning Twilight about the governor's captives had included a rough map of the mansion. The hallway the team found itself in now was, at Namir's estimate, less than 50 meters from the captives' supposed location. If there was an ambush waiting, they'd be walking into it soon. Namir gave the rifle slung on his back a quick feel, confirmed he hadn't somehow lost its comforting bulk during the fight. Stealth would only take them so far, and he wanted to be ready. Charmer took the lead next. Namir didn't correct him. Somehow Charmer always wound his way to the front when an ambush seemed imminent, for reasons Namir couldn't understand and couldn't bring himself to ask about. Losing his face hadn't broken Charmer of the habit. Namir certainly wouldn't be able to. Onward down a cramped passage into a supply pantry that smelled of citrus. Namir assumed the scent was artificial until he saw that there was fruit. Real fruit. Casually stocked with the rest of the governor's boundless wealth. He drew one long breath of the aroma and then shook off the distraction. Past the pantry was a kitchen, sleek and metallic, and packed with long-limbed droids nestled in their power stations. Charmer paused at the narrow door leading farther into the mansion and shrugged. The map indicated the captives were in the next room. Namir glanced at Brand as she took a position across the doorframe from Charmer. "If anyone's been saving a flash bomb," Namir said, "now's the time to speak up." No one did. Fine, Namir thought. No smoke cover, no flash. We breached the old-fashioned way. It didn't bother him. The old ways were what he knew best. He clipped the stun rod to his belt, took his rifle in both hands. Charmer and Brand mirrored him. Namir nodded. Charmer hit the door's keypad, and they surged inside together. What they found was a dining hall, or what had been a dining hall, now so strewn with printouts and hollow displays and maps and portable screens that it resembled the inside of a bureaucrat's skull. Standing amid the makeshift workstations were half a dozen Imperial Army officers, caps doffed, expressions haggard, sweat staining their black uniforms, who were so intent on their work that it took half a second before they looked up at Namir and his squad. Namir took aim at the first man to reach for his sidearm, a sharp-nosed colonel who'd been pacing alongside the dining table, and watched the rest of the group hesitate. Brand and Charmer swept their rifles in steady arcs while Namir kept his eye on the colonel. "Prisoners, where are they?"
"What prisoners?" the colonel asked.
Namir's muscles were taut. He kept his voice calm. "The ones you captured, or the ones you claimed you captured."
"I have no idea what you're talking about," the colonel said.
His right hand began to edge toward his belt. Namir cocked his head. The colonel froze again.
"He really doesn't,"
a voice replied, warm and resonant in the dining hall. Namir wanted to turn to look at the speaker, but taking his attention from the colonel would mean death. He kept his rifle aimed, kept his body turned toward his opponent, and trusted that Brand or Charmer would cover the remainder of the room. The new speaker slowly resolved in his peripheral vision. She was emerging from one of the side entrances to the hall, a human woman whose olive-skinned visage was lined just enough to add gravitas to a once youthful face. Her black hair was threaded with gray and white, and she wore a dark formal suit trimmed with red and clasped with silver buttons. In contrast with the suit's obvious expense was a worn and stained duffel bag she'd slung over one shoulder, the kind a rebel soldier or a vagabond might carry.
"I'm the captive here," she said with bored disdain.
"The fact the colonel doesn't realize it."
As the woman spoke, she let the duffel bag slide from her right shoulder and land heavily on the floor. The words kept coming with that same idle tone as, while the bag fell, she drew a blaster pistol from her left pocket.
"Shows how little he pays attention."
The blaster flashed red, and Namir's target fell to the dining table, a hole burned between his shoulder blades. Namir wasn't sure who fired next. The sound of one bolt merged with another and another after that. He dropped to his knees, swung to acquire a target, saw an officer with a something, maybe a weapon, maybe a comlink, in his hand, and shot him. Flecks of stone spilled onto Namir's hair as someone blasted the wall above his head. He scrambled forward, took shelter under the table, reached up and over, and fired wildly. The dead colonel's legs obscured his view of the other side of the room. The bolt slowed. He rolled out from under the table and loosed a volley at the first black-clad form he saw. After that, only one officer was left. Namir didn't understand what the Imperial was aiming for at first. The man had backed himself into a corner and his blaster was low, pointed toward the floor. Then Namir saw the pile at the officer's feet. Charmer was kneeling on the ground, moaning in pain, both hands clasped to one of his hips. Namir began to turn his rifle on the officer, but the woman in the suit killed him first, with a snarl and a flick of the blaster in her hand. Namir ignored her and hurried to Charmer's side. Gently, he peeled back Charmer's hands and examined his right hip. The material of his pants was scorched through, the fibers melted into blackened skin. The injury wasn't fatal, but it had to hurt, and Charmer wouldn't be walking out of there. Namir bared his teeth in what he hoped was a smirk. "Quit moaning," he said. "It's already cauterized. You want it to bandage itself too?" Charmer laughed hoarsely and croaked an obscenity. Brand methodically secured each door to the dining hall as Namir stood and looked to the woman who'd claimed to be the captive. She was standing at the dining table, pouring a pitcher of water over her hands as if to clean them, not of blood, as Namir thought at first, but of caked-on dirt like clay. Her weapon sat beside the pitcher. "Who are you?" he asked. The woman barely glanced toward Namir as she wiped her hands dry on her hips.
"My name is Ivari Chalice," she said. "Governor of Hadoral Prime. Emissary to the Imperial Ruling Council. And, of course..." Here her lip curled up as if at a private joke.
local artist in residence. She began walking among the bodies, nudging each with the toe of her boot as if to confirm that it was dead. Declaring myself a captive may have been an exaggeration, but I needed your attention. When she came to the colonel, still sprawled across the table, she leaned in close, hoisted him by his hair, and spat between his unseeing eyes. "Glad you're so loyal to your staff," Namir said, slow and cautious. When Chalice turned around, he had his rifle aimed at her chest. She didn't seem bothered. "They weren't mine," she said sourly. "My staff, my advisors, my bodyguards, my chef, were taken away months ago. These men were here to police me at the behest of the Emperor." Charmer was trying to stammer something. Namir only heard the word chef. Brand glanced from a side door to Namir and then to the governor. "Shoot her," she said. "Hedoro deserves that much." Namir scowled. The pieces weren't coming together, and he suddenly felt the weight of days without sleep, the 30 hours of fighting. "Why did you need our attention?" he asked. "Thanks to the rebellion, my days with the Empire are numbered." The governor smiled, but her tone was acid. "I understand your recruiting. I want to join your company in return for asylum." Namir took aim with his rifle. He wondered how many more guards were in the mansion and how long he had before they showed. He tried to guess how much Charmer's injury would slow down the squad's exit. He didn't have time to parse the lies at play. Then came a low electric warbling and an oscillating flash of blue light. The governor's lips parted, but she said nothing. Her limbs stiffened, and she fell to the floor beside her bag. Namir swung about. Standing in the last of the unsecured doorways was Gadrin, two arms clasping his weapon and aiming the barrel toward where the governor had stood. He was breathing hard, enormous shoulders rising and falling.
"We lost contact. I thought there was trouble. I am pleased to see I overreacted."
Brand eyed the fallen governor. "She's still breathing," she said. "Why a stun shot?" Gadrin crept to Charmer's side, pausing to assess the scarred man's injuries before gently lifting him from the floor and cradling him in two arms. Not until Charmer was secured did Gadrin say,
"I feared for the captives. A blaster bolt could have killed one."
"No captives," Brand said.
Gadrin nodded, not in comprehension, but in recognition that now was not the time for questions. Namir stalked to the governor and checked the body. She was breathing steadily. No spasms, no choking, no irregular heartbeat. Stun bolts weren't reliable, but this one seemed to have done its job, which meant the governor was still Namir's problem. "We'll pack her up, take her to Howl." He nodded toward Gadrin. "If you've got room for one more. No need to be gentle." Gadrin roughly grabbed the governor by her collar and threw her over a shoulder, using one hand to keep the body in place. Namir wondered if Brand would argue, but she was lifting the governor's bag as she said,
"They say kidnapping an Imperial is bad luck."
Namir couldn't tell if she was joking.
"Bad men crave bad luck," he replied.
It was a saying he'd learned long ago in a more primitive world. "Now can we get off this planet?" He was ready to be done with the rain. He was ready to sleep. He was ready to forget the piles of dead civilians and the opulent mansion filled with aromatic fruit and busts of murderers. The attack on Hedoral Prime hadn't been a failure, but it had been laden with troubles. Now, he was taking one of those troubles home.